Doctor Who Short Trips. Landbound by Selim Yuluk. Read by Nicholas Briggs. The sea was grey in the late afternoon, the sky overcast, and a cool breeze blew into the Whitby coast from the North Sea. Ronald Henderson didn't mind the cool air, bringing with it the smells of the sea, the sounds of the waves and the gulls. He relished it. Closing his eyes, he could almost feel the deck of a ship beneath his feet and hear the splash of waves against the hull. An odd noise caused him to turn, and he saw a flash of yellow bolting down the lane, coming to an abrupt stop just before the waterfront. It was a car, some kind of roadster. The driver appeared agitated and slapped the steering wheel. There, thought Henderson, as he adjusted his sailor's hat and buttoned his wool jacket, is another lost tourist. Henderson sauntered towards the vehicle.
"That's a fine motor car you've got there,"
Henderson said, glancing up and down its length. The man simply grunted. Focusing his gaze on the man now, Henderson noted the shock of curly white hair, the velvet jacket and frilled white shirt. Whoever this man was, he didn't appear to be the typical weekend tourist.
"Name's Henderson. Ronald Henderson. Anything I can do to help?"
"Help? No, I shouldn't think so. Thank you just the same."
"Suit yourself. You have a pleasant day."
As he took his leave, Henderson saw the man wave. He wasn't sure if the wave was friendly or dismissive. Perhaps it was both. Taking a pocket watch from his waistcoat pocket, Henderson noted that it was time to get back to work. He passed two young men, ignoring them, lost, as he was, in his thoughts and memories. He continued up the road, taking the first right. This led onto a back lane, with the rear entrances of businesses on either side, along with their dustbins, the odd bicycle. And then he was stunned, his head aching, and he was doubled over with the wind knocked out of him. A moment of respite. He straightened a bit, casting a glance around him. He was surrounded by three men, young, long greasy hair, tattoos. One wore a leather jacket. And then a hand gripped him by the neck, holding him still, while another rifled underneath his jacket until it came across the pocket which held the...
"No!"
he screeched, his voice broken and hoarse.
"No, you can't have that!"
"You heard the man,"
someone said. Everyone turned. The speaker, hands on hips, was standing a few feet away. Curly white hair, velvet jacket. It was him, Henderson realized through his daze. The man in the motor car.
"Take care of him, Gus,"
one of the youths said. Henderson blinked. He could swear that the older man's mouth had just crinkled up into a smile. The hand moved from Henderson's neck to his face, squeezing his cheeks, and his gaze was forcibly drawn towards his attacker. The hoodlum squeezed harder and loomed closer until their noses nearly touched. Henderson could feel the man's breath upon his face.
"You should be paying attention here, mate. You're causing us more trouble than you're worth, you know. Now, what do you think I should do about that?"
"This really won't do, you know."
It was him, the old gent.
"Just let him go, won't you? There's a good chap."
Henderson sighed with relief as the young ruffian released his face. His jacket, though, was still caught in a steel-like grip. Turning, the youth grinned.
"So you managed to land a lucky punch, did you?"
Gus was laid out on the ground, breathing hard and clutching his abdomen.
"Right, Johnny, let's do this."
With that, the man released his hold on Henderson, and the two assailants approached the stranger from both sides.
"Run!"
Henderson shouted.
"Get away from here!"
"Run? No, not from the likes of this riffraff,"
said the older man. Johnny threw the first punch. The man sidestepped slightly, grabbed the extended arm by the wrist, twisted, then shoved him into the second attacker. The man shot a quick jab to the nose over Johnny's shoulder. Then he twisted Johnny's arm again and flipped him so that he landed hard and appeared winded. The leader, who had sunk to the ground, clutching his nose, was wailing.
"What?" the rescuer growled. "No, don't tell me. You can dish it out, but you can't take it."
Brushing off the assailant's clawing fingers, the man rummaged through his pockets until he found Henderson's watch.
"There you go. I believe this is yours."
Henderson, his eyes wide, took the watch and clutched it to his chest.
"Thank you. I've never seen anything like it. Not unless it was on telly. How did you come to be here?"
"Ah, well, as to that, you see, I realised I'd been rather churlish when you'd graciously offered to help, so I came to offer you an apology."
Extending a hand to his rescuer, they shook. Then Henderson said,
"Consider your apology accepted,
Most people just call me the Doctor."
"The Doctor? Fair enough. Now listen, I own a pub just nearby. Tell me you'll come with me and be my guest."
The two men turned and watched the three hapless attackers as they got to their feet and limped away. Facing Henderson again, the Doctor hesitated, then shrugged.
"Well, Oh, very well, why not? Lead the way."
Henderson nodded and started back towards the road.
"We'll go back and around, so you'll see the place from the front entrance, not from back here."
They walked in silence for a short while. Then Henderson said,
"This watch, you know, it was my father's and his father's before. And in all those years, it's not lost a second, not one."
"Do you mind?"
said the Doctor, extending his hand. Henderson hesitated, then placed the watch in the Doctor's palm.
"Of course," he said.
Taking a magnifying glass from his jacket pocket, the Doctor examined the face of the watch, then the back. Finally, he held it up to his ear, his expression changing from vague curiosity to one of genuine delight.
"This is remarkable workmanship," the Doctor said,
handing the watch back to Henderson.
"Absolutely remarkable."
"So you know your timepieces, do you?"
said Henderson. The Doctor shot Henderson a glance. Henderson couldn't quite make out the expression, though it might have been restrained amusement.
"Well, yes," said the Doctor. "I suppose you could say that."
Henderson, who'd been clutching the watch as if it might leap out of his hand, placed it back in his waistcoat pocket and said, almost to himself,
"Lost time is never found."
The Doctor regarded Henderson as if he were reappraising him.
"Benjamin Franklin. Quite a brilliant chap, really, for..."
"For?"
"Well, for an American, shall we say,"
the Doctor concluded with a smile. Henderson laughed out loud and patted the Doctor on the back. From the main road, they turned right and strolled along a cobblestone street with a bookshop, chemist, penny arcades, and a few tourist souvenir shops. They soon came to a small bricked building with large windows on either side of the door, each sheltered by an awning. The door was painted blue, and over the top was a sign that swayed and creaked slightly in the breeze. It had a weathered painting of a dancing figure with a pint in his hand and the words, "Jolly Sailor."
"Here we are," said Henderson. "Pub on the ground floor, rooms to let upstairs. Off to you."
And with that, he held the door open for the Doctor. Henderson, unable to read the Doctor's expression, tried to view the interior with fresh eyes to see what he was seeing. The lighting was dim, hopefully not excessively so. Wood panelling adorned the walls, and beams crisscrossed the ceiling. Rows of plates were mounted on one of the walls, each depicting a ship of some type upon the ocean. Large prints of ancient maps were scattered throughout. The clientele consisted of a few tables of men and a smattering of husbands and wives. With a smile, Henderson nodded to the couple behind the bar. Taking the Doctor over to them, Henderson said,
"Jack, Michelle, this here's the Doctor. He's just saved me from a spot of bother. Anything he wants is on the house. Here?
Jack nodded and smiled. Good to meet you, Doctor. I know what this here bloke drinks, he said with a wink to Henderson. What can I get for you?
Well, said the Doctor, would it be too much to ask for a decent vintage of Bordeaux?
After a nod from Henderson, Jack said, You know, I may have just the thing. You two make yourselves comfortable and Michelle will bring the drinks round. Henderson led the Doctor to a small table near the window. After a moment spent watching the passers-by outdoors, the Doctor turned his attention to the bar, a look of concern on his face. Henderson chuckled.
Don't be worried, Doctor. As it happens, I enjoy the odd drop of wine myself from time to time, and I think I've got a pretty good selection. Better than you'll find at most pubs, mind. But you can judge for yourself.
As Jack proceeded to pour a pint of ale, Michelle disappeared under the bar, reappearing with a wine bottle in hand. Taking the pint from Jack and a wine glass from the rack overhead, Michelle brought the items to the table and set them down.
Thanks, love, said Henderson.
Smiling, Michelle opened the wine, then proffered the cork to the Doctor. The Doctor sniffed suspiciously, then nodded. Michelle poured a small amount for the Doctor and stepped back. The Doctor lifted the glass, noting the wine's colour and clarity, swirled it around, placed his nose over the top of the glass, sniffed, and took a gulp, letting it dwell on his tongue before swallowing. His eyes widened, and he placed the glass on the table.
Acceptable, he said. Yes, very acceptable indeed, thank you.
Of course, Michelle said, and poured again. All set then, Captain?
Just fine, love, ta, said Henderson.
After setting the bottle on the table, Michelle returned to the bar.
Captain, said the Doctor.
After taking a healthy swallow of his ale, Henderson said,
I was a captain. That was some time ago. Came a time when you wished for solid ground beneath your feet, is that it?
Another swallow, and Henderson said,
I didn't give up my command voluntarily.
Ah, said the Doctor. He took a sip of his wine and continued,
Yes, I think I know what that's like.
Henderson's surprise must have shown on his face. The Doctor smiled and continued,
Yes, I have a ship of sorts. I used to travel all over the place. Then my superiors disabled it to prevent my going anywhere at all. Oh, why would they do that?
Queried Henderson. Another sip of wine, and the Doctor said,
They felt I shouldn't be interfering in the affairs of others quite so freely.
Henderson nodded slowly.
Interfering, as you did just now with me?
Along those lines, I suppose, yes.
And that's why you were so upset at the waterfront. Sometimes it just builds up, doesn't it? The anger, the sense of waste, knowing there's so much more you could be doing.
The Doctor's eyes widened a bit.
You know, I think you're quite right. Yes, I was angry.
The Doctor paused, considered Henderson's friendly, open face, then continued.
I'm a scientist, uniquely qualified, you might say. Presently, I'm consulting with a United Nations organization. I've offered them a great deal of help in the past, but what thanks do I get? Requests for basic equipment ignored, ordered about like someone's lackey. And just now, my hard work to broker a negotiated peace agreement was completely subverted. That, along with the loss of my ability to travel, it was all too much, you see. I took off as fast as I could to get as far away as I could, only to run out of road when I arrived here, icing on the cake, as it were. I hope you understand why I might have been a bit short when you introduced yourself.
I think nothing of it. I know exactly how you feel.
Setting down his glass, the Doctor looked at Henderson closely and said,
I take it you have a similar tale?
By now, Henderson had finished his drink Without a word, Michel appeared and replaced his empty glass with a full one.
I was captain of a cargo ship. The Ethel H, she was called. And we were coming home, just a few miles off the coast. She sank. All hands lost. All except me, the captain.
They felt it was your fault?
I was the captain,
Henderson said simply.
Of course, said the doctor. It's not just the shipping company. You feel responsible, don't you?
Henderson nodded slightly.
The tribunal declared that we must have run into some debris, perhaps junk that had been floating in the North Sea since the war.
And?
There was a pause while Henderson took a long drink of ale.
And they must have been right.
Henderson paused again, cast his eyes down, and added quietly,
Though that's not what I reported.
You needn't say any more, you know, said the doctor. But I promise that you can trust me.
Henderson looked closely at the doctor, then sighed. Setting down his glass, he glanced from side to side and began, his head down, his voice nearly a whisper.
I've told no one else about this, so please.
The doctor nodded, and Henderson began.
We were coming up on sunset when the ship did indeed collide with something. But it was not debris, or so I believed. It was something living.
Henderson took a long drink, then continued.
We felt a dull thud from the starboard side. And the Ethel, not a small yacht or ferry, mind, but a 1,000-ton cargo ship, lurched with the impact. We stopped the engines and looked to starboard. At first we saw nothing but the ship's hull and the water. Then a shape emerged from the sea. Large it was. The size of a whale, I think, maybe larger. But here's the thing. Its skin was transparent. You could see right through it. Its brain, its heart, they were enormous and plain as day. It bumped against the hull again, hard enough that we had to catch our balance. Then lifted its head out of the water, opened its jaws, fixed its mouth upon the hull. It hung there for a few moments, pulling it down towards the waterline. And we felt the ship list to starboard with the weight of the thing. Then it let us go. And we all looked at each other with relief. It was only moments later we felt another lurch. And the ship began to list as it had before. It let us go again. But then we heard a terrible sound. A wrenching, ripping sound. The sound of the hull. Its outer surface being torn away. The alarms came. She was taken on water. Quickly, so quickly. The hands down below must have been lost at once. There wasn't enough time to release the lifeboats. No time to send a distress signal. You can't imagine how a large ship could go down so quickly. I found myself in the water with no memory of how I got there. I had to wipe blood from my eyes, whether mine or someone else's, I had no way of knowing. I swam towards some flotsam floating nearby and climbed on top. I was there for hours, at least it seemed hours. I've no idea how much time actually passed before I was rescued.
Henderson took another long drink, then regarded the doctor, fully expecting to see amused scepticism. Pity, even. Instead, the doctor seemed animated, about to jump out of his seat.
Now see here, said the doctor. You must tell me, the creature. Did you see any appendages?
Henderson's eyes widened.
Well, when it comes to that, I only caught a glimpse, mind, but there were appendages. They were transparent as well, but long, suckered. They seem to come from all around the beast, top, sides and bottom, for all I know. They were like an octopus's, you know?
I see, said the doctor, resting his elbows on the table and leaning towards Henderson.
And of course, no one believed your report.
As I said, they determined we must have collided with some sort of floating rubbish and that I'd been remiss in initiating evacuation procedures. I spent some time with a counsellor while on leave and came to see they must have been right. I mean, they must have been, mustn't they? No such creature exists. No, it was best for everyone that I retire, and I did. Who'd crew with a captain who hallucinates sea monsters?
Henderson ran his hands through his hair, looked up to the ceiling and took a deep breath.
What if I told you, said the doctor, that you weren't hallucinating? That the creature you saw does exist?
Well, I don't know.
Henderson looked closely at the doctor. He expected to see amusement in his face, some sign that he was teasing. There was none.
I might say you're as balmy as I am.
The doctor smiled and his eyes twinkled.
Trust me, he said. What you saw was real. I've seen this species in their natural habitat, which, as it happens, is a rather long way from here. The thing about them, you see, is that they consume metal. They excrete a saliva that softens it, then use their appendages to rip off pieces and ingest them.
I know what you're doing, Henderson said, his voice rising slightly. Trying to make me feel better.
Let me ask you to trust me. I've come to terms with the past, and I'm happy enough with what I have.
Let's let go of the past, shall we?
After all, we are made wise not by the recollection of the past, but by the responsibility for our future.
The doctor grunted.
George Bernard Shaw.
Yes, said Henderson, and grinned suddenly.
An Englishman.
The doctor smiled slightly in response. Glancing at the doctor's glass, Henderson noted it was empty and poured another. By now, he had a fresh pint of ale.
Well, I've one more for you, Doctor. Time heals all wounds.
With that, he raised his glass.
To new beginnings.
The doctor sat back, sighed, then lifted his glass.
To new beginnings, he repeated,
his tone becoming sullen in marked juxtaposition to the words he spoke. The door opened just then as a pair of customers entered, allowing a breeze to blow in. This seemed to attract the doctor's attention for a moment, then he brightened slightly and sat up straight.
Actually, I need to be off. You've reminded me that there's work waiting for me, you see. Important work, and for that I really must thank you.
With that, the doctor stood. Henderson, taken aback slightly at the suddenness of the doctor's decision, nodded, and they shook hands.
Good luck to you, Doctor, said Henderson.
And to you, said the doctor.
My, but it's quiet this afternoon, Michelle noted as she wiped drinking glasses behind the bar of the Jolly Sailor.
Aye,
said Ronald Henderson. He was cleaning a table next to the window.
Well, it's been cold and wet, hasn't it? Seems the rain stopped, though, so maybe a few more customers will find their way here.
He joined Michelle behind the bar, just as the tinkle of the bell announced a new customer.
Oh, there you go, Michelle. What did I... Well, Doctor, good to see you again. Why, it's been months.
The doctor appeared unchanged, with the exception that he now sported a green jacket rather than a black one. Beaming at Henderson, the doctor approached the bar.
How have you been keeping, old chap? Inquired the doctor.
Oh, you know, nought changes very quickly in these parts. And you?
The doctor smiled.
Well, I do have some news, as it happens. I've got my ship back, in full working order. Seems I've been given a second chance.
Henderson was speechless for a moment, but he slapped the doctor on the shoulder, grinned broadly, and said,
Well, you won't be running out of road any time soon, then, will you? If anything calls for a drink, that does. What will you have?
Actually, I'd rather hoped you'd come and see it for yourself. What do you say? It's just around the corner.
Around the corner? But how? Oh, never mind, of course. You must show me.
Michel, you can manage for a bit. With a smile, Michel said, Get away with you. Pub'll still be here when you get back. Grabbing his hat from a shelf behind the bar, Henderson let the doctor lead the way. As they walked, the doctor said,
My superiors, you see, they got themselves into rather a spot of bother. They called for me to help, and in return, well, you can guess the rest.
They turned left, walked a short distance further, then stopped. The doctor turned to Henderson and said,
Well, what do you think?
Henderson looked around and was puzzled because there was nothing there. Nothing but an old police box. Stepping forward, the doctor patted the blue shape.
Are you daft? Said Henderson. You're not going to tell me that this thing, this police box, that this is your ship?
That's exactly what I'm telling you, said the doctor.
Taking a key from his pocket, the doctor unlocked the door and beckoned Henderson to enter. Henderson backed away.
Now see here, said the doctor. I'm going to have to ask you to trust me. You owe me that much, you know.
Henderson nodded.
Aye, I do. This is mad. But fine. If it makes you happy, I'll step into your police box.
He did. And no sooner had he done so than he dashed back out.
What?
Said Henderson. He took off his hat and bunched it in his hands.
What is this? A trick?
No trick, I assure you. I've told you no lies, though I may have omitted some details. Come in, and I'll explain.
In a daze, Henderson followed the doctor, who flipped a switch and closed the door behind them upon reaching the console.
I'm not actually human, you see, said the doctor. My people are called Time Lords, and ages ago, long before your ancestors discovered fire, they had discovered the secret of time travel. This ship, we call it a TARDIS, can take us anywhere in space and to any point in time.
Oh, aye,
Henderson said faintly.
But I didn't bring you here just to show you my TARDIS, said the doctor. There's something you need to see.
And with that, the doctor pulled a large lever. The central column in the console began to rise and fall, and a noise filled the room as the ship seemed to wheeze and groan with effort.
What's happening? Said Henderson.
We're going back in time, said the doctor. Not too far back. As I said, there's something you need to see. Ah, here we are.
The noise, was it the engines? Abated, but did not stop altogether. The doctor flicked a switch, and the TARDIS door opened.
Now come over here, said the doctor, moving to the door. But stay inside. We've materialized over the ocean, you see. We're hovering over the surface.
Oh, aye,
said Henderson, looking at the doctor skeptically. But as he approached the door, his jaw dropped.
We've moved,
he said.
Indeed we have. Now, take a good look. Tell me what you see.
Henderson swallowed.
Well, there's the ocean, of course. The sun is near setting. And there... Oh, my good Lord. There's a cargo ship. That's never...
Yes, said the doctor. It's your cargo ship. The Ethel H. Your younger self is on board with all of your crew. Now watch.
Something is about to happen.
They weren't far from the ship, about 100 yards. The sea wasn't exactly calm, but no more restless than normal. The sky was grey, overcast, and there was a chill in the air. Henderson felt a much deeper chill penetrate his bones. Then he saw something. It swam under the TARDIS towards the ship. Not so much a shape as a displacement of water. It was something translucent.
Oh no,
Henderson wailed.
Oh no, no, no!
What you see is a resident of a planet very far from here. The species is very intelligent, and this poor fellow must have crash-landed here.
Poor fellow?
Henderson turned to the doctor, his face turning red.
That thing killed all of my crew!
My dear chap, said the doctor, his face puzzled. He's no way of knowing there are people on the ship. On his planet, much different than your own. Chunks of metal break off from land masses, much as icebergs from glaciers. He eats metal, you see. So to him, this ship is just a floating meal.
The creature bumped into the ship, and they saw the vessel rock with the impact. Then it raised itself above the waterline and affixed its mouth to the hull, pulling the ship towards it. After a few moments, it let go and repeated the process. Henderson felt that his heart was going to burst through his chest.
Doctor! Stop this! You must stop this!
The doctor shook his head sadly.
I'm afraid I can't.
You can't?
Henderson's eyes widened with disbelief.
Can't or won't? You said this thing is intelligent. Communicate with it! A dozen men are going to die if you don't!
That's the problem, said the doctor. They already have. I'm so sorry. I brought you back to witness events, not to change them. I know this is difficult, but you see, this has already happened in your timeline. To undo that would bring about catastrophic damage to the fabric of reality. We're here only to observe. For you to see that what happened to your ship wasn't your fault. There was nothing you could have done.
Now the creature's tentacles emerged from the water, barely visible, and they began the grisly task of ripping off pieces of the hull.
Enough!
Henderson wailed.
I can't bear to watch this, not again. Take me back, please.
Yes, said the doctor. Yes, of course.
And with that, he closed the door and pulled the dematerialization lever.
You know, said the doctor, well, I can't change what's happened here. I can make sure it doesn't happen again. I'm sending a distress signal to the alien's homeworld. They should be able to retrieve him in short order.
Henderson nodded wordlessly, his back to the doctor. When the TARDIS touched down in Whitby, Henderson turned to the doctor. Wiping tears from his eyes, he said,
I know you meant well, Doctor. But I don't know if I can forgive you for making me relive that moment.
My dear chap, I'm so sorry. I appear to have misled you. My intention was... well, you know.
Henderson nodded wordlessly and shuffled to the TARDIS door. The doctor opened it, and Henderson left without another word. Calling after him, the doctor said,
Think about it, won't you? It's not too late.
A year passed, and the Whitby docks were bustling with activity. A large cargo ship was docked, and her captain, clipboard in hand, shouted orders and advice to his crew as they completed loading. It was late afternoon. The sky was clear. The sun had begun her descent. Gulls trilled overhead, and a gentle breeze kissed the captain's cheek, bringing with it the smells of the sea and old memories.
Well, said a voice behind him, look at you then.
Henderson whirled around, his eyes widened and his face split into a huge grin.
Doctor!
So you've heard, have you?
He reached his hand out and they shook.
Indeed I have, old chap, said the doctor, clapping him on the shoulder. I looked into the Jolly Sailor and they told me your news. You see, a friend of mine has, well, moved on to pastures new, I suppose. Jungles, if we're being accurate. I found myself at something of a loose end. But this is the perfect tonic. I must say, this is absolutely splendid.
It is indeed. Never imagined it would happen.
After I got over the shock of, well, your previous visit, let's say, I marched into the shipping offices and wouldn't leave until they'd restored my command. And here she is, the Albert H. I have you to thank. Again, I might add.
Nonsense, the doctor said. I simply showed you what you already knew.
The smile left Henderson's face.
This time, it's I who must apologise. About what I said to you afterwards. I was still in shock, you see. I truly am grateful to you.
My dear chap, said the doctor.
A whistle sounded on board the ship. Henderson said,
I wish we had more time, Doctor. I've so many questions for you. But I dare say our ships will take us on different paths now. So let me just say that I'll never forget you. Godspeed you on your journeys.
And you, my friend, said the doctor.
Hands in his jacket pockets, the doctor stood quietly, breathing deeply of the fresh sea air, as Henderson and his crew boarded the ship and cast off. Led by a tug out of the harbour, and then running under its own power, it gradually shrank into the horizon as the sun set, casting a ruddy glow upon the earth. Finally, when the ship was out of sight and the dark had set, the doctor turned. It was time to set sail for the cosmos.